Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
So, a little bit about me. You might be asking yourself, why in the world at ProductCon are we having a designer talk? And that is an excellent question, and I'm not really sure. So, I'm going to try and put the pieces together. So I've been through what I consider to be three career choices. The first is that I was an architect. I have 2 degrees in architecture. I practiced for about 4 years, and that career died in 2005. Now, what was interesting is that I'm old enough that at that point, there weren't any schools for digital, so it was like cool to have architects doing your website. More on that a little bit later. But with that education, what I was able to do is I made a transition and I became a digital agency designer. So I did that for about 8-9 years, and that was fun, did a bit of an agency tour around New York, and decided I didn't like giving my babies to somebody else to bring up. So I went in-house in 2013 and strictly focusing on product design. And the reason why I'm here today is to talk to you guys about what you can do as product to help design be successful so that you can be successful. Think of it as a user's guide, right? Like if you've ever been house-sitting for somebody and they leave you the directions of how often to water their plants, I'm going to tell you when to water and feed your designers, which, just FYI, is always, but we will help you. So, I am currently at Google. I am lucky enough to be in the ads organization, which means that I support Google's mission directly of keeping the internet's information universally free and accessible. And it's a real honor to be able to do that. So whenever you get to go and like read stuff for free, it's ad supported, and that goes through our organization. All right, so I'm going to give you guys a brief history of product design. This is shamelessly stolen from John Maeda. I steal things from a few people, but at least I like to give credit. So this matches up very, very closely with my own career, right? So at the beginning, it was like design coming at the end. We've already built this thing for engineer. Pretty it up, okay? Make sure the buttons are the right color. We don't want to hear any questions. It's too late for that. All right, good. And then we realized that not having that design thinking early on really didn't help the product be better from a user standpoint. So then we went into waterfall, right? So this is where you bring those expensive cross-center designers in at the beginning, get them to do their thing, and then get them on to the next thing, because you know those designers just eat up money. So in this, what we found out is that stuff comes up. Right? When you're building something, you discover an edge case, requirements might change, and then you've lost your designers, and who can recognize what comes out at the end? So now, we're in this interesting point where we've got that seat at the table from beginning to end, right? If you're working agile, we're in the teams, we're in Vivek's Pizza Pie teams, but how are we really making a difference? And that's what I kind of want to talk to today. Now, I feel very, very lucky, because I think design's kind of having a moment right now. And in my view, the moment started here. Okay, so this is the first iMac. I was lucky enough at my first job at a grad school to work on one of these. And what I see here is the moment when these beige boxes that everybody hated looking at but loved working on suddenly became objects of joy. You could make people like their computer better by putting it in a candy-colored shell, right? And the next year, they came out, and they were all different colors. If you're really lucky, you were working somewhere where you could choose your color. I still got this one, because, you know, architects never get the good stuff. But really, everything started to have that design attention to it. Even the trash cans got a bit of attention, right? And people were throwing out their perfectly good trash cans that could still hold the stuff they wanted to throw out for something that looked a bit cooler. So, at this time, I was working at an architecture firm. As I mentioned before, it was cool to have architects doing your websites because nobody was educated in how to do this. In a firm called Asymptotes, right here in New York City. We had offices in Soho, and they were famous at the time for this, which is the Guggenheim Virtual Museum. It was online, I think, never, but it was really, really cool, and it was talked about. Now, that is not what I got to work on. I got to work on, actually, I'm going back, sorry, you'll get the hand raised in a second. I was working on bathroom details, because as a young architect, that's what you get to do. You get to spec toilet paper holders, you get to make sure that the circles are big enough for wheelchairs to turn around, not the sexy stuff. But the owner of our firm came into the room of the interns at the time and said, all right, which one of you knows Flash? All right, now cue the hand raise. So I was a total lie. I was like, I have no idea what I've just signed myself up for here, but it has to be good or he would not be asking. So on the way home that night, I stopped by Labyrinth Books, and I picked up a handy O'Reilly book. I picked up the Macromedia, because that was the official book. That book was terrible. If you have a copy of it, it's good for Kindling. You just got to crush it up a little bit. And I stayed up until about 4 or 5 in the morning reading all about Flash so that I only didn't know how to do my job by about 99.9% instead of 100. And what that got me was $6 an hour. What that also got me, though, is that my time was worth something. So that at 7 at night, when the rest of the interns were being told to buckle up, they had a long night of model making ahead of them, I was told to get out of there. Because I cost money. And so suddenly my time was worth something. And it made me just start to question, like, how do I, as a designer, at that time an architect, continue to make myself worth something in this space? And I took that curiosity with me as I went and started my own multidisciplinary firm. And I got to thinking. Now, all of you, I'm expecting, are well-versed in this product team, right? So you guys are all, I hope, making magic. You've got your design partners. You've got your research partners. Obviously, you are the product people. Nice hat. Cool sunglasses. I tried to make you guys the coolest. I hope you're feeling the love. And your engineering partners, okay? So I only want to talk about the people here that you probably don't know as much about, okay? This is the love. The product making love. Okay. All right, so these are the ones that you know. The other ones... slide, not working. Let's talk about what these design people do, right? Because we're not actually a monolith. There's a lot of different types of designers, just like there's a lot of different types of houseplants. Just going back to my earlier analogy. All right, so let's talk about who's who in design. All right, now I understand that some companies might go the design generalist route. There's pros and cons to each, but let's break it down. So UX designers, everybody know what a UX designer is? Okay, cool. Let's do this quickly. So UX designers, they generally live in the like black, white, gray zone. They're doing what we call wireframes is sort of their bread and butter work. They also may be under the names of interaction designers, experience designers, information architects. But basically, they're thinking about information hierarchy, flows, interactivity, and they're helping you map that out. Our visual design friends, they're the people that make it a branded experience, right? Because a lot of times what you see around the web is like you put your thumb in front of the upper left corner of an experience and it looks just the same as anybody. That's bad. That is not what you want. We're all out here to make differentiated products. So you got to really have a great visual design team to think about how to make it yours and not somebody else's. Now, content partners, often hard to get in that budget. We're going to talk about budgets. But they're really magic, right? If people are confused about what they need to do in your experience, A, I'd say you probably haven't designed it very well. But B, the words matter. People don't read on the internet long things. But what these people do, it's the content strategy. It is the words on the page. It gives them directions to do things. It's incredibly important. And then our friends on the research side, they're the people who tell us the what, why, and how to make sure that this is successful. Why is this so important? So I believe that when you have a really good design team, it actually helps all of you be more efficient. My experience has been that most product people are incentivized by number of launches, right? Vivek, in our last talk, talked about how we went from like 80-something launches per year to over 4,000. That's awesome. But if your stuff flops when it's in the marketplace, if people aren't engaging with it, if it doesn't work to build loyalty or increase sales or revenue, it's not worth much, right? So if you do it right up front, there's an efficiency that comes by it. And it's counterintuitive because you're going slow to go better. I think I mess up that saying. I'm good at messing up sayings. So Recently, there was a report called the Design Maturity Report done by our friends at Envision. The reason why I say our friends, they have a collaboration tool that Vivek and I use together. But they did a really comprehensive study and looked at what a design team can bring you and how to know if you are interacting with your designers well. So I'm going to stop and talk about that. All right, so as you go up in maturity, that's going to the from the lower left to the upper right side of this slide. And I'm going to talk about a little bit about what this means and the kind of interaction that you would have with your designers. Talk about how we can make it better. All right, so when you're playing the long game, you guys are helping your designers be business owners with you. That's that top right corner. But I challenge each and every one of you to think about where you are on this scale. 41% of companies are on the bottom. So the bottom rung, basically, I think is that pretty it up version, right? You know you have to have design. Nobody gets away without having designers. They're probably stretched too thin. They can't go deep. They do what you say without pushing back. That's low maturity, okay? Pretty it up. That's my quote, not Envision's, even though the source is there, sorry. 21% of companies are second to the bottom. Now, what's really deceptive about this is that a lot of people in this category think they're doing really well. We have workshops, we have prototypers, we make mocks, we include designs, we do participatory design exercises. Cool, great. This is where your designer's acting as a facilitator, okay? They're helping you get done the things that you want to get done. They're still doing the things that you say. They're not pushing back on you too much. If you ask them a question about usage, they might know it and they might not. I just want to pause here, because a lot of times when we're thinking about research, we're talking about like a top two box for customer satisfaction. This is the bottom two box, that almost two-thirds of companies are in the bottom two box. So I want you guys, again, to think, likely two-thirds of you guys are in the bottom. Now, let's talk about what it looks like when you're not at the bottom. What does great look like? I know it's usually said, what does good look like? I don't like to settle. Why you should care. All right, so when you are in an organization that has design maturity, look at the difference here. When your level five companies, they feel four times as often that design has had a proven impact on revenue. Oh, right, that's one of the things that product people care about. Cost savings, that's what your bosses care about. Time to market, that's one of those things you like, right? Those thousands of launches. And you'll see the valuation, for those of you at startups, 26x. All right, so what is this telling you? This is basically telling you design is good for business. Now, this is not the first time that this has been brought up, but this is looking at over 2,000 different companies of all sizes in all industries. So guess what? It applies to you, I promise. All right, so how can we, as designers, do more with you, our product friends, usually our best friends at the company? How can we deliver, achieve, share, persuade more? All right, let's talk about it, guys. This is the meat. The first thing is to bring in your friends. It's actually really cool that so many of the vendors here are about analytics. Really, really important building block of ensuring that your designers can be good for your business in this way. A previous manager of mine described this as playing Moneyball, right? So when you begin to measure everything and count everything, you can find the things which are important and you can design towards that, right? So this might be, this is looking at an analytics slide. Details don't matter, right? Numbers tell good stories. They tell you where to look. They tell you where to prod. They tell you what your next release should be. Being design-driven pays, right? So Envision did a bit of a moment in time study. Harvard Business Review also did a study over 10 years, and they found that being design-driven, which they defined in six different dimensions, pays, that those companies which were design-driven outperformed the S&P by 228%. Don't know where the percent went. This is cool. I work at Google. We do Google slides. This is in PowerPoint. Anyway. all right, so what do analytics give you? Analytics give you what people are doing, all right? If you want to be really good at counting, you also need to do some other things. You need to do some qualitative. Oftentimes, these are different researchers. So I hope in the back of your head you're going, wait a minute, is this why the design group needs to be so big? Yes, yes it is, because we don't always do the same thing. When you talk to people, it's called qualitative review. You need to have a good critical mass of those numbers, but that tells you why people do the things that they do. Because when you talk to people or when you take surveys about an experience, roughly like 60% of the time, not on purpose, very well-intentioned people misrepresent what they're actually doing. So you use the analytics so that you have an accurate view of the what people are doing, and then you find those points that you need to dig in, and you figure out the why. And then you want to get to be like, you know, Miss Cleo and predict the future. So that is the will. And that's where a different kind of quant comes in, where you can do surveys and concept testing on a larger scale. A/B testing is great, multivariate even better. And you can begin to predict what people are going to do. When you put together that perfect triangle of data, that's when you can go to market with a high degree of confidence that you will be able to be successful with your launch. All right, bring friends along, and non-friends, especially the non-friends. So designers are really good at doing stuff like this, which I think just like confuses the heck out of anybody that looks at them. Like they're so sexy and it makes it look like designers are really smart and, you know, we're wearing our artist hat, which I really don't believe in, right? Like art is for art's sake and I love artists, but that's not what we do in product design. Product design needs to serve the business values and the business needs, as well as the user's needs. And when you bring those together, that's where magic happens. And so doing deliverables like this, while fun and like gets you good design friends, doesn't really help us in my view, because who can figure out what the heck is going on in either of those? The answer to that, you know, for a while, this is like one of my favorite guys. We don't have the sound, but I think you guys should all remember like Microsoft CEO being developers, developers, developers. So for a while, the answer was, hey, designers, you're going to learn to code. That's the key to getting impact. And it was really interesting, and I coded for a while, and it was fun. And then I realized that there were a lot of people that did that way better than us, and it didn't actually get me anywhere. And then I began to think about who are the people that actually made more of an impact, right? So whatever you want to say about Steve Jobs as a person, the guy made impact, right? He's somebody people look up to. You associate him with those gorgeous product launch talks, also black turtlenecks and all of that good stuff. But when I think about what CEOs like Steve Jobs do, they act like owners, right? Going back to design maturity level 5, where 5% of companies are, right? So even then, 95% of you, probably not there. They tell stories that make us believe in magic, right? And you buy into the strategy, and you believe in what they're going to do, right? And usually you like working for people like that, because then you know how your work fits into it. It's fantastic. So the playbook. What can we do together to ensure that we're moving up that maturity ladder and having the biggest business impact we can? It's counterintuitive. And I know this from doing it wrong. I've gone in and you, like as a designer especially, you want to go after the big shiny object and make the biggest impact you can. It's probably part of like coming from my agency space. It's a flop. It makes people incredibly nervous. When you go after the thing that makes all the money, people are freaked out when you want to change a lot of stuff, especially coming into a new company when you haven't built up your reputation and your relationships. So start with something small. So what Vivek and I did, for, I don't know, this was like week 3 of when I worked at LearnVest, Northwestern Mutual, is we decided to start with the customer dashboard. Customer dashboard was something, as Vivek mentioned, that very few people were on digital, right? So it's not driving any revenue, it's not selling you any insurance, it's not, you couldn't buy any investment products through it. It's just somewhere where you could like go and see your status, right? So we got a little small team. We had 2 product people. We had 4 engineers. And I did all the designs myself, because at the time, we only had 6 designers. And other stuff that was actually on the roadmap needed to get precedence. So I put my kid to bed. Around 8 o'clock, I'd start wireframing. It was a very exhausting few weeks, but it was definitely worth it. And also, when you're taking something which has no value to anybody, nobody's going to ask you questions, because it's not scary. What's the worst you can do? There's like, it's not going to take money away from people. So it's a good place to start. And we created value. right? So we created interest. We got people to do some of the things that the company cared about, like signing up for e-billing instead of having to spend millions and millions of dollars on paper. We got people to aggregate their accounts from the outside so that their financial advisors knew what their financial situation really was. And we got people coming back more and more often, right? So maybe your life insurance company is not going to pass the toothbrush test, like you're going to be checking on it every day, but we wanted to get a more relevant space in people's lives. And that started to happen. You'll see. Looks pretty different, but at the beginning, almost no functionality difference at all. Just made clickable things look a little bit more clickable. In order for this to be a success, you need to measure what you achieve. I've been in a lot of places where you, our product friends, and our engineering friends have access to much more data about what the users are doing than your designers. You gotta bring them in, right? Part of moving up that design maturity ladder is giving them the information they need. Because once they have that information, then you can start to evaluate, are these the right kind of designers to take us there? Or are these the designers that just wanna make the beautiful pictures? And if they're the latter, well, maybe those aren't the ones that are gonna drive your business. So sort of rinse and repeat. Another example from my history is when I was at AOL. This is what the mobile app looked like at the time. So we did the same thing, where we took a small team of about 6 people total, including design, engineering, and product, redid the app in 12 weeks, and all of a sudden, amazing things started to happen. And what was weirder, it was totally stealth, started to be articles being like, what's going on at AOL? They did an app and it's good. And they sounded really that surprised. Gotta get a thick skin when you're in design, because nobody's gonna tell you that your baby is beautiful. no, seriously. I like to joke, like, I mostly came up from the UX side. UX makes people nervous, whereas, like, research always makes people happy. And, you know, this is something where, again, you can really rinse and repeat by taking the small things that have no value. And what it does is it builds the relationship. It builds trust. So bring these opportunities to your designers, right? Look for the thing that maybe has potential but is not performing at all. That's the place to start. All right, so I hope you guys have gotten as excited as I am about partnering better together to further the business, further my love of data-driven design, because I think it's exciting. It's the key to our success. Whether you're in a big company or you're in a teeny tiny startup, working together, we're gonna push your success faster. But thank you, you guys have been absolutely wonderful and I am humbled to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.